Hello everyone, and welcome back to One-on-One for the first time in 2022. It has been a busy year, and it's been a while since we've touched base on our sports odyssey, and well, I'm heading back to the world of football. This is part one of a three-part series looking at influential media members within German football. And I thought the best place to start would be someone who is on the ground floor, working the pitch side, giving interviews. And this particular guest works for ESPN and BT Sport in the UK with their Europa League coverage. I speak none other than Archie Rintut. I spoke to Archie back in April to discuss everything about getting into the industry, his interests, and why he has become such a pivotal figure in sports culture within the Bundesliga community and the greater American community through his work with ESPN. I really enjoyed my conversation with Archie, and I hope you will too. So grab a cup of tea or a pint of lager and enjoy our conversation. Well, Archie, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. It's obviously going to be a busy time for yourself. The Bundesliga is near its crescendo. We've got the World Cup coming up later in the year and all this football happening. How are you, first of all?
I'm good. I'm trying to remember what I've got to do in the coming weeks. Looking forward to the end of the Bundesliga, first of all, as weird as a season as it has been, I think the table looks more interesting than many Bundesliga fans are necessarily finding it, because obviously Bayern are marching on to what looks like a 10th consecutive title. And if it's anything else, then I think everybody, including the eventual winners, should it be Borussia Dortmund, I think even they'd be a bit surprised and wouldn't really know what to do should they win it. But still can't see it. But I'm good.
I'm glad that you're good. I'm glad to have you on. You know, it was a bit of a late move, but we were happy to make the deal happen. It was one of those deadline down kind of situations. But unlike Sunderland with Will Grigg, this one's going to work out just fine, one would say. So I just wanted to start off with something simple, bit of an icebreaker. You've done a lot of interviews throughout your time, and we will touch that in a moment. So is there someone that you haven't interviewed, whether it's a player, a coach, maybe in a different sport, could even be like an actor, that you'd love to interview?
Ooh, good question. I've somehow managed to not speak to Robert Lewandowski. I'd like to talk to him at some point, because I think he's a very interesting character, let alone the stature that he has in the game. But in terms of elsewhere, there's not a name that jumps out at me from music or film. Maybe film. Maybe Wes Anderson. Because the way that guy's mind works, I like his films. They're very aesthetically pleasing. Got a big Grand Budapest Hotel poster up on my wall here. So yeah, all right. Robert Lewandowski or Wes Anderson.
I love it. Hopefully, right. Come on ESPN. ESPN, yeah. Do your business.
Make it happen.
Get him an interview. This needs to happen. I mean, give the people what they want, which is, we need it. We need it to happen. So I guess I'm going to take you back way back in time at little Archie time. Where did your love of sport begin?
It would have been playing football on these pitches where Wimbledon FC, the predecessor to AFC Wimbledon, where they used to train. And I mean, these were like huge sport pitches, and I used to do like Saturday morning football when I was, I guess, 5, 6 or 7, with people who I went to school with. So my dad tells me I wasn't particularly good, but if anyone got injured, I'd be the first to run and get them water. So I created a role of use some way through that. But yeah, just growing up, really, watching all kinds of sport, mainly football, being taken to Fulham by my dad. I had a flirtation with the dark side of West London for, I'd say, about a year or so. But I think, you know, I think we can be forgiven for things we do when we're seven. I hope, anyway. And then, yeah, got season tickets at Fulham when I was, it would have been in 2000, which, if you know your championship history, or your Division One history as it was at the time, that this was a good time to be getting on board the Fulham bandwagon, because we went up as champions, Fulham, and played with, yeah, incredible front line players. Well, I think the most noteworthy player, Louis Sahar, and what he went on to achieve. And then the following season, first year in the Premier League, and you've got Steve Malbronk and Edwin van der Sar playing for you. And you're like, oh, these guys are quite good. So, yeah, I think that has to be the root of it all.
I love it. You mentioned your dad. Would you say he was the biggest influence on you in a maybe not only just a sporting context, but just in general?
Yeah, he certainly did. I remember he used to enjoy testing me in the car on the way to games of, like, where do Burnley play? Or, yeah, like, you know, what was the score when Aston Villa played Blackburn? Now, half the time, as I realized when I grew up, he had no idea to these questions. And I think he was just merely interested to find out what the answer was. But yeah, I played along. And yeah, I think there's something there, because particularly from a sporting perspective, he's the guy who was taking me to football every other Saturday and that. And yeah, I think you obviously develop a certain, like, relationship in your head with that, and you enjoy certain moments. And I remember, for example, was 2011 when Fulham were playing Arsenal, and it was 1-1 going into the final minute of injury time. Bobby Zamora scored to beat Arsenal. And look, as a Fulham fan, that's a particularly sweet feeling, because you grow up with Arsenal fans, you grow up with Chelsea fans, particularly those, and you're always like, I mean, these people for some reason feel the need to kind of hold it over you that their team has beaten you. And it's like, well, your budget's four times the size of ours, so congratulations on that. But it's a particularly sweet feeling when you get one back. So I jumped around a bit, and I kind of pushed my dad away in a can you believe this? He happened to topple over into the next row, and then it became a double celebration when I climbed into the next row and he's kind of on the floor. I was like, is he moving? I hope he's moving. He's moving. And I pulled him up. It's like, you okay? He's like, I am. I'm like, yay. And we scored. Yay. So, yeah, it's those kind of moments that stay with you. And that, so yeah, he certainly helped foster love of sports and also radio, because any time, like, we'd be coming back from a game, it would always be, right, we're in the car and we're listening to BBC Radio 5 Live and Sports Report. And yes, that's what I was brought up on, radio wise and yeah, I still if I hear that music that they play at the start of Sports Report, it still kind of gives me a little feeling. And also, because having been in Germany for a few years now, you miss little things like that. So yeah,
I love that so much. So you did mention the radio stuff, and moving into a career like sports media, being a reporter, very well recognized by the wider public and very much well worth that recognition. What pursued you to go in that general direction? Because I know it's something that A, is very, very competitive as an industry, but also, you know, if you're good at it, things can really happen in a very positive way. So what led you to want to pursue that kind of career?
I loved radio. Really loved it when I was younger. So I used to the station has become a lot more, how do I put it, political. That's probably generous. There's a lot of output that I don't agree with anymore on the station, but LBC is the name of it. It used to be Leading Britain. Well, it used to be London's Biggest Conversation. It's now Leading Britain's Conversation. I grew up listening to that. If my mum was driving me to school in the car, I'd listen to the breakfast presenter, Nick Ferrari, with her. Sometimes, I think, because I would have been at school for the rest of it, James O'Brien. And the weird thing is that I then went on to work with these presenters, driving the desk for them part of the time. And I went to work for LBC. I got some work experience there. I still have the emails of when I sent like a request to do work experience there, and there are like 20 exclamation marks saying thank you. So I was passionate. I had enthusiasm, which thankfully they could see and just try to refine slightly. And I mean, look, I used to listen to there's this guy who used to present late night on that called Clive Bull. I ended up working, I mean, in the office with him. I probably the nicest guy I've ever met. But that was particularly weird because my cousins and I were so cool growing up that we would have sleepovers where when we were going to bed, we would turn on Clive Bull at night and listen to kind of his soft dulcet tones. And I think just from that, from listening to LBC, from listening to Five Live as well, talk radio was something that always interested me. Even, I mean, growing up through my teens and that, I mean, I was listening to LBC when I was about 11, 12, which is probably not the target audience. But to be honest, I make it sound like it was a choice. That was what was on in the car. So you're listening to that and you're like, well, I'll get on with this. And, oh, okay. I think that's probably what drove it.
It reminds me of that Simpsons episode where Homer's listening to the right-wing political commentator, and Lisa doesn't particularly like it, and Homer obviously challenges her to, well, if when you're driving, you can listen to whatever you want. And the scene, as the scene goes, Lisa ends up driving the car, and Homer just completely hates it, and they switch back. That's what I'm imagining. I don't know why I have a really strange Simpsons thing. I find it weird.
A friend of mine has Simpsons reference. Has I think a Simpsons reference addiction as well.
Yeah.
Anytime anything happens, like I helped him with something the other day, and he just sent me back a GIF of Martin being like, I'm learning. I was like, okay, great. I didn't even know that existed, but thank you. Cheers.
No, it's okay. I do it to some of my friends in Germany, and they're like, I've never watched The Simpsons. I don't understand the reference. I'm like, how? I don't understand. We're getting off topic. You've worked for some pretty big brands, Fox, currently with ESPN and BT. Obviously, this is the second year ESPN has had the broadcast rights for the Bundesliga.
How
did that deal come about? Because obviously, for an American audience, it's growing. We're seeing the presence of the Bundesliga being broadcast on ABC as well, with Derek Ray doing some marvelous work as per usual. How did that deal come about for you? And what do you enjoy about working with as they call themselves, the worldwide leader in sports.
So when things came to an end with Fox, I approached ESPN and said, would there be a chance of a conversation? There was. We had a conversation, and then I got the job. It was quite simple, to be honest. they're great to work for because of, I think, the freedom to tell stories within the parameters, not being afraid to look at other angles than just say transfers, for example. And on a match day, I get quite a free rein in terms of the sort of things that I can approach, and I'm trusted to do stuff the way that I want to do it. But also there's a great there's a great exchange that I have with my main producer there, and that's good, because sometimes it's about, okay, is this the right way to go? And it's just being able to have this constant exchange of views, and that way you can just improve all the time, because they're always, as cliche as it is, there always is something to work on. You don't get the editorial line right every single week, but I think that the more you're able to look back at stuff and go, did we get it right, then you're going to hit it more often in the future. It's just about sometimes you go in a direction, and yeah, you're sitting in the car on the way back and you're like, why didn't I ask this, or why did I ask that? But I think that's part and parcel of it. Working for ESPN is doing this position of being able to if my voice holds up, being able to rove around Germany and seeing these places, it's going to be different now, because there'll be fans in the stadium, and that for me is, to be honest, what this should be like, and I'm really excited for that. And yeah, it's great doing that, but also the other side of the job with ESPN FC, with Dan Thomas, Kay Murray, Sebastian Salazar, and all the pundits they have on there. And yeah, it's fun. It's fun having a chat with someone who you don't hold the same opinion as. It's important to have these conversations, because I think we're all so stuck in our algorithmic worlds now that you're entrenched in your own opinions, and you don't necessarily get to see what somebody on the other side says. And it's so stigmatized to if somebody believes something different, then that also by extension means that they are this kind of person. And I think that it doesn't help. Of course there are some people in the world who you want to avoid, but generally in football, I don't think that's the case. So yeah, I love every aspect of it, and it is as much fun as it looks.
Oh, it does. I hope. Absolutely. No, it looks like you're having an absolutely right of a time, and frankly, it would be something that, you know, one of the things I want to do in the next few years is obviously head over to Germany. I've got some great people that I want to catch up with who have been bartering for me to come over, but obviously the pandemic has set tragic effect to that at the present moment. Do you want to talk about the main, for you, what was the main difference that you felt doing your job last year in the stadiums where there was virtually no spectators at all, to now where we're starting to see, you know, close to 75% capacity? I know tonight's game in Dresden, because they got Schalke in a few hours' time, which I think is a World Feed game, and they're going to have 30,000 there, but there'll be bigger games like Dortmund on the weekend, for example. What have you found is the big fundamental difference to you being able to do your job in a COVID situation like we've seen over the past couple of years versus now, where obviously you're still having to wear masks and all kinds of stuff, but you know, there's obviously spectators in the grounds.
It's how it feels, to be honest. It's remembering when a team comes forward that, oh wait, fans make a sound at this point. I've forgotten that, because you've just watched so many games in relative silence, or you've just heard, you know, some enthusiastic clapping from somebody on the bench. It's remembering those sounds and being reminded of what that brings, and how a big slide tackle can also change the momentum of things. And also, because it's been without ultras in Bundesliga stadiums, that's a different atmosphere. It's been more reactive to the game which is going on, rather than just these well-rehearsed, choreographed chants and kind of constant ongoing beat that the ultras offer. So I'd say that's the thing that strikes me first and foremost. And that, so I live close to a fire station, so that will happen. And then I guess from a work point of view, it's just being wary of, I mean, this might be the dullest answer, so bear with, but it's just being wary of what you are and aren't allowed to do. And you have to just keep 2 meters away from the person who's next to you at all times. So yeah, it's nothing personal if I'm standing that far away from somebody. It is just them, the rules. So yeah.
Yeah. And that's understandable. And eventually we'll get to a point of some sort of normality. It's just a case of when. One thing that I have noticed, and I think all of your followers would have noticed, is the things that you do prior to a game, those quick 2-minute videos previewing the contest. And I'm particularly a big fan of some of the Europa and Conference League ones that you've provided. I think it was one in Denmark with Ronders, and they had the biggest, like this, one of the largest slip and slides near a ground. And I obviously love that kind of stuff. What inspired you to do that kind of content on Twitter, and where do you come up with, where are you able to get this research? Because honestly, it's absolutely gangbusters.
So I don't really think about it that much. I started doing it just because I needed more on camera experience, and I also felt that I had information that I wanted to share, and not necessarily the platform to do that. So I thought, why not give that a go? And people started watching it and feeding back on it and saying they liked it. So I kept on doing it. And I enjoyed it as well, and was helping to provide a little portfolio for me as well. So it was quite simple on that regard. And in terms of with coming up with ideas, I think that, look, from my perspective, people don't want to hear just about the game, because we are always talking about the game, and that it's about trying to show things that you can't see on the telly, the sorts of things that you can only really see if you are there. And that's the perspective that I just want to try and keep with those things. If it's something small, like, you know, somebody walking past me and flipping the bird or that, I might mention that as well, because just, you know, people can be weird. I think it's about almost that, the recognition of just how things are and what the mood is like. And, you know, sometimes I've needed to be careful. I remember before Dortmund played Leipzig a few years ago, it was a bit of an edgy atmosphere outside the ground, and I still filmed something, and I had to film it a couple of times because people were coming up to me being like, where are you from? I was like, England. And they're like, oh, that's okay. And I was like, okay, cool. But yeah, you've got a bit of an edge in that, but no, I just try and do it as natural as possible, and trying to feed a few things into every game that somebody watching it might not know about. So yeah, that's yeah. Just try not to overthink it, which is yeah, I think difficult sometimes. But I do it. I still do it because people seem to enjoy it, and it's good fun as well because I can't necessarily, you know, there's a lot of research that goes into every game, and I can't fit everything in that I may want to talk about because that's the nature that there's only a limited amount of time to put things into certain slots, and some things need to be editorially chosen over other things. So it's a nice way to almost let off that steam, if you will.
Yeah, I love it. It's great, a great force of, you know, different perspective of the game, and because obviously there's so much, as you said, there's so much information leading into the game, and the commentators have a massive script of things that they might touch on, and obviously they might not touch on everything. But yeah, so I guess this might be a bit of a tricky question to ask, and I'm not sure if you'll be able to give it a rundown, but
go for it.
Let's say there's a match coming up. Let's say tomorrow Dortmund are playing at home. You're covering the game for ESPN. What is the typical workday for you?
So depends what time kickoff is. So the game tomorrow, for example, is 6:30. 6:30 local time kickoff. So in that case, I would check in the morning to see if there's any other news that's broken, and check in indeed if there's any updates from my producer in the US, who's obviously 6 hours behind. So I've got a little bit of leeway knowing that he's not going to be up for a little bit of time anyway. But then I generally try and get to the ground 3 hours before the game, because traffic, and it's also I just like to be there early. Gives you plenty of time and space to do things and to just do last checks, and also time to say hello to people that, yeah, if you get there even an hour and a half before, then you're in a lot more of a rush, and things also need to be very, very boringly, things need to be tested technically and make sure that all these connections are working and that. And then, yeah, I mean, for example, we're on air half an hour before the game on Saturday, Dortmund Leipzig. Watch it on ESPN Plus. And then we'll have 20 minutes build up with Jan Agerfjordsoft and myself on pitch side, and along with a couple of interviewees. Then from there, it's watching the game. You get to watch the first half, I think, pretty much in its entirety. Half time, back on air. So during the first half, I'm making notes of a couple of points that I will see that, again, just along the lines of what can somebody who's here see that somebody on TV may not notice or not be able to see, just along those lines. But also in my position, trying to pick the brain of Jan Agger, who with his experience will see things that I won't see. And then second half, it's about I have to start watching the game a little less. I'm a little less into it because I'm thinking, what kind of things am I going to be talking about post game? What kind of issues, what direction? Is there a little moment which is happening with a player? I don't know, he's having a particularly intense battle, the striker against the center back, for example. I thinking about these little things as well to try and feed into the questions, but also then you're liaising with the press officers of both clubs about which players will be available post match to talk, and which players they want to put up. And then post-match happens. In TV, it's the luxury of you get players brought to you. You have a chat. Hopefully it all goes all right. And then I move off home. So yeah, I mean, I move off home if I'm close enough to it. If I'm within a couple of hours of Cologne, that's possible. But otherwise, then it's the end of the day.
Love it. Nice. You've obviously worked in the industry for quite a long time, and obviously many more years to come, I'm sure. What is the biggest challenge that you faced working in such an intensive industry?
I mean, challenges are relative, I think. Like, trying to remember to look after yourself and not say yes to everything, because otherwise you just become an app. Otherwise you can't carry off the job in the way it's needed to. And five years ago, I would have said, so personally, I would say that's the biggest challenge, is being able to, yeah, give yourself enough rest in between, allowing yourself to switch off and realize that you can have a day without reading Twitter and whatever magazine publishes a story that day, or talking to a contact and be like, this is okay. Like, my body needs this. It needs a day on Netflix, or a day just walking out around the city. The biggest challenge, what do you mean, I guess, professionally on that point?
I guess it's a really broad thing. I mean, you can talk about things like workload, challenges with maybe interviews, post-match interviews being prickly because they've come off the defeat. I guess it is a rather broad one.
You see, like, on the prickliness thing, I have a lot of sympathy with the players, in that I try and put myself in their shoes and think, it would if I've been charging about for 90 minutes and then someone sticking a microphone underneath my nose, it's going to be it's not going to be easy necessarily to say everything that I want to say, or indeed, do I want to even give that away? So I would say is just one of the things that you have to deal with, and you have to judge, and you have to try and empathize with the person who's standing opposite you. I think that for me is probably one of the biggest challenges, is remembering that, or just always keeping in mind that as much as they may be doing superhuman things sometimes on the pitch, that they are still the same as you, and you need to try and talk to them on that level. And that to be honest, that's easier the longer that I've done it. But yeah, I remember the first few times when you naturally overthink it. So yeah, but I think, yeah, it's trying, probably the biggest challenge of the industry is to, three answers. The biggest challenge of the industry is, I think, to try and not be steered by what is being said on Twitter, on social media, and trying to have your own independent thoughts, because I think we can all, and I've been drawn into this myself, we can all get drawn into, I'm going to say something which I know people are going to like, that it's going to set people off in a positive way, rather than like, is this the right thing to say, or, you know, properly challenging what you're thinking about. And yeah, I think that would help with making sure that things are kept fresh in that sense, in terms of the kinds of things that we are saying. So yeah. Oh, and you've got a very cute kitty there.
Yeah, Sammy.
That people can't see.
Sammy has decided to join the conversation because she has not a lot going on, but I think she spotted something.
No, sure.
But yeah, she makes herself present on all the podcasts that I do with Eva for for the Spider Book Three podcast. So,
yeah, the other one is asleep, I think. So, in Abbey. So, I do have a couple more questions. I know I did want to touch on Fulham.
Go for it.
Because, you know, as you mentioned earlier in the podcast, it could be a lot easier to follow a team that is run by a Russian oligarch or a soulless American owner, even though they're his team on the Super Bowl. But let's be honest, he hasn't invested enough in Arsenal for them to be relatively good for a long time. They're obviously having a record-breaking season, topped by what feels like a country mile, leading goal scorer in the great Alexander Mitrovic. It looks like another season of Premier League football next year. How difficult is it supporting a team that is yo-yoing between the top two divisions?
Not that difficult, to be honest. I mean, look, you're wearing a Portsmouth shirt, right? Your club's been through existential crises. Derby County right now are looking down the barrel. If you're a Bury or a Macclesfield Town fan, then you actually lost your club and had to start again. So, look, in the realms of English football, everyone's own experience is intense and that, but I can't describe it as difficult. I can describe it as frustrating at times, because, you know, there are things that are happening and as a fan, they're out of your control. So yeah. And I think knowing that next season will probably be another difficult one, that's the discussion that my dad and his mates have with, well, I sure, but is this just going to be another season for the parachute payments? Are we going to be able to get in the right players? I'm not particularly encouraged myself about the club's approach to, are they going to get the recruitment right? They've had a couple of goes at it, improved last time, but maybe it'll be different with fans in the stadium. Let's see. But frustrating as it is for most, I would say, on very different levels. And yeah, look, it's a luxury, but Fulham are stuck in that Norwich position, partly out of, not through, I would say, necessarily a fault of their own. I think they could be run in a smarter fashion, a la Brentford, which hurts now. But at the same time, I think that the way that the Premier League is set up, the way that the parachute payment structure is, there's an inevitability that you're going to get Fulhams and Norwiches who land in this position.
Yeah, I know there's like a massive discussion going on with the concept of obviously equal paid for, you know, the TV money, especially in the Bundesliga, is a contentious point of discussion in the idea of helping to, I guess, give clubs who get promoted a better chance of staying up. Although we've seen over the past few seasons in the Bundesliga, a few Zweite Bundesliga clubs, Arminia Bielefeld being probably the most recent example.
Why would you mention them?
It just comes to mind. I would have no idea, and I'm definitely not influenced by a particular co-host of mine on my other podcast, but you've got them. Union Berlin's another one who is now thriving and is probably the number one team in Berlin at the moment, whether Hertha fans want to believe it or not. If Hertha can't continue to win games, then they'll get to hear me talk about them for 34 match days, which, I mean, I'm not entirely sure they'll be too pleased about that, but I mean, that's kind of where they're going. But, you know, Felix Magath's an interesting coaching hire. I guess there's two more things I want to touch on before we head off, and we've been very grateful for your time ahead of the weekend. One thing that's very noticeable with a lot of things that you do presenter-wise is you're very much an advocate for promoting good causes. We've seen you do a lot of stuff with the LGBTQI+ community, and over the past few weeks and months, you've been wearing the Ukrainian ribbon during live telecasts. How important is it for you personally to use your platform to, you know, keep people informed of, you know, current modern issues and using that platform to invoke change in society. That, you know, we, it's obviously a very complex situation, but how important is it to bring awareness to these things for you?
So firstly, it's kind of you to say what you say there about the LGBTQ plus community. I spoke about that around the time during Euro 2020 when UEFA would not put up the rainbow flag on the Allianz Arena. That's, and I kept up as my profile picture still the something from that where I'm holding up the badge. So look, that there are people who are proper activists on this, and whilst I appreciate what you say, I realize as well that it's a relatively small gesture that I'm making there, and I don't want to overplay that. But look, at the same time, yeah, I think it is important to speak up and to try and use what platform that I have to raise awareness of these issues and with what's happening in Ukraine and Russia, that's as much as just how I'd love to say that, you know, there was like a big plan in my head, but this is also just a lot of the time I'm just driven by feeling, and that's how I felt at the time. And you know, I have friends who are in the LGBTQ plus community, and that's kind of what, but that, I mean, it's not kind of, that's what drove what I did. Because the way I see it is, how can I look them in the face as my friends and say, did I do everything that I could have to raise awareness of what it's like for them, what it would be like for them in other countries where there isn't that tolerance? And that's the parameters I put it into. And likewise with the Ukraine and Russia thing, sorry, that's really poor. With Russia's brutal invasion of Ukraine, it's difficult not to be affected by that on a human level. So yeah, and look, I think mental health has been something which is also very personal to me, and that I've had to learn when is the right time for myself to speak on that and when is not the right time. And I was going to and have made mistakes with that, but I every now and again I get a direct message from somebody on Twitter or Instagram saying that it helped them just a tiny bit. And for every message like that I've had, I mean, every makes it sound like loads, probably about 20. But for those people, it makes it worthwhile. So I think that's the biggest thing I take away, and actually which draws all three of those things together, which is, it's not about trying to have the biggest impact or try and make the biggest gesture. I try and see it as how can I improve my little corner of what I do, and, you know, and just that's all I can do. That's all that is in my power, and I will try and continue to do that, really. So yeah.
Man, I felt that. Damn, we may be many hundreds of thousand kilometers away from each other, but yeah, I felt that quite a bit. And my last question before we head off is, there are many people who might be listening who are interested in a career in sports media. What's the one piece of advice that you would give them to help them head into the right direction?
One piece.
I know, I've limited you here, haven't I?
You're going to have to work on weekends. You're going to have to work on weekends. I have to say something else on that. And also, don't be afraid to do other things than sport first, and because that will help to give you perspective about what sport is. And it's far more, as is being shown in the world right now, it's far more than just, can you recognize what a 442 is or XYZ? It's everything around sport, is everything that is happening around it, and there are many other things that lends itself to that, whether it is, you know, an encyclopedic knowledge of film and being able to relate that back to a certain moment that you see in the game or a press conference. I think that these things are as important because they help you connect with the people that you are talking to, because the people that you're talking to are, you were one of them once. And yeah, I think that it's about how you can present that in as down to earth a way as possible, in that you're talking to them, not talking at them, and you're having conversations with them as you would in a pub, bar, establishment. I don't know. So yeah, I'm going to call that 1.5 pieces of advice. So thanks, Matthew.
1.5 pieces of great advice. Archie, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute blast. We appreciate you going one-on-one.
Thank you.
Archie's a gem, isn't he? And it was really great to hear his insights of how, when a deal goes down with the Bundesliga leaving Fox to go to ESPN, how just a simple email was more than enough to see him become pitch side and one of the most recognizable voices and faces of the Bundesliga for its American coverage. It was also great to hear about what he does outside of football and really how he got into the industry as a whole. Archie, it was an absolute privilege to speak to you on that April evening. Thank you so much for taking the time, and I do hope one day when we get to Germany, I will catch up with you. Until then, thank you so much, and thank you for listening to this episode of One on One. Part 2 of our Footballing Media Odyssey will be on June 16th, so be on the lookout for that. And until then, enjoy your weekend, as this has come out on a Thursday, and I will see you next time.